All right, everyone. Welcome to tonight's episode of the Hot Widow Club. My name is Crystal, and I'm the hot widow of Eric. And with me tonight, I have my dear friend Allie, of course, my partner in crime, who is the hot widow of Ross.
Hello.
And this evening, we have our very first special guest, who I'm super excited to introduce to our audience. Tonight, we have Trish with us, who is the hot widow of Mike and the current hot spouse of John. So welcome to the show, Trish.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Allie and I have talked before about how we met one another. It actually all really stemmed from Trish. And so we are very, very excited to welcome her to our show and to talk to her. And quite honestly, neither Allie nor myself have really explored with Trish widowhood. And so tonight is going to be fun for us to do something a little different that we haven't done before.
Yeah. Are you ready, Trish?
I'm ready.
Good. Good. We're excited. Before we jump into interviewing Trish, a couple things we have to give some updates on. And I think the first thing we want to cover tonight is the Kentucky Derby. I know Allie has got something that...
Yes. Rich Strike. Did you watch the Kentucky Derby, Trish?
Yes, I did.
You did?
It was amazing.
It was. So Ross was a huge fan of the Kentucky Derby. So he would every year go bet on one of the horses and would always put all his, not all his money, but his money on a horse. And it became a tradition. I would go with him since I met him and we would go bet on a horse and watch it. And it was so much fun. But this year was so crazy to watch, like the aerial view. Did you see that, Trish?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And this, just watching this horse that was the underdog come out of nowhere and win the whole thing. I'm like, for me, it's like a sign.
It's a phenomenon.
Yes. Not only that, my grandfather, my mom's dad, I was super close with, and his name was Rich. And I always told Ross, I'm like, I cannot wait till you meet my grandpa in heaven because you guys would be inseparable. They're so similar. And they both loved horse racing.
Mm-hmm.
Like my grandpa was a huge into horse racing and he loved golf. And so did Ross.
Nice.
So anyways, I feel like that was their day together.
Yeah.
So I had to share
it. Did you place a bet?
I didn't. I should have. I should have played it on Rich Strike.
You should have played it on Rich Strike.
I know. Did you watch it, Crystal?
I did watch it.
Yeah?
Yeah. Did you guys ever go to, what's it called?
Horseman's Park? Yes.
No.
Oh, Kentucky Derby?
Yeah. What's that called? Like Horseman's Down? Churchill Downs.
Churchill Downs.
No. Yeah. No. Someday. Yeah. I would love to do that.
I've never gone, but I feel like that is something we should go to.
Yes,
we should. And you could wear the fascinator hats and you guys would look amazing.
Yes, that would be so fun.
Trish, I have been looking for a reason to buy a fascinator for a number of years. So, Allie, if we have plans to go, I think that's my calling.
Yeah, I have a couple you can even borrow. I love fascinators.
I'm going to borrow one of those fascinators for our bash this weekend. That's what I'm going to wear.
All right.
I've been trying to figure out what I'm going to wear to this big party we're going to have this weekend. And maybe a fascinator is in the cards for me.
Okay, you can borrow one of mine.
Excellent.
I can't wait to see.
So, Trish, did you bet on any horse?
No, but I always watch it. I was a horse person growing up.
You were?
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Okay.
So I love watching the races. And what amazed me is the people who were announcing the race. Mm-hmm. When this horse broke into the lead, they didn't even know who he was.
Yeah.
You could tell they fumbled with the sheet and said, oh, that's Rich Strike.
Mm-hmm.
They hadn't even thought of the name because it was such a long shot.
Wow.
I think what I took from it is you can be somewhere you didn't even know you were going to be. You can be the low dog on the totem pole and you turn out on top.
Yeah.
Which,
that's awesome.
What a great, I guess, way to view things.
Mm-hmm. Right.
My gosh. Yeah, that's so true. I love that too. Thank you, Trish. That's awesome. I think another thing we want to talk about, which isn't quite as much excitement. Well, maybe I should talk about carpool. I had an event.
Okay.
I had to take the kids to school on Monday and cars were backed up. I spent like 15 minutes in this carpool lane trying to get these girls dropped off. And of course, the girls don't want to get out until I get to the door.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm yelling, unbuckle, stop, drop, and roll, get out, move, move, move. And, you know, they're like, what's at the door we want to get out at? Who's in charge here? The mom or the 13-year-old? I don't know. But anyways, I got him out. I got through the event. I think I only have one more carpool day before school gets out. So last time our listeners will have to ever hear me talk about carpool.
Yeah, it's almost summer.
Till next year. There'll be more, I promise. What else do we have for
updates? Well, the big thing I wanted to talk about was Mother's Day, because we haven't recorded since Mother's Day. And this was the first Mother's Day that I had without Ross. I don't know. I went into the day not expecting to feel so sad, to be honest, because this month is hard already. It will be Ross's 1 year in 9 days, actually. So I felt like that day was looming, or that day is looming. So I didn't put too much into Mother's Day. But when Mother's Day came, it was so much worse than I expected. I don't know. I don't even know why. It was just, I was reminded constantly the whole day again about, if Ross was here, he would have celebrated me. And, you know, I can't ask my kids. They're too young. They don't understand. They learn in school that it's Mother's Day. They both made me cute little gifts, and it was just precious. But Ross would have made it this huge deal. And not that it needs to be a huge deal, but I just feel like I've turned into so much more than just a mom. I've turned into also a dad, also fully responsible for our house and our finances. And it just, for whatever reason, that day reminded me that I am so much more than a mom. And I don't know, it just was a really hard day. And so I just wanted to talk about that and see how your guys' Mother's Day were.
Trish, how was yours?
Well, my Mother's Day was great. I got two wonderful meals, neither of which I had to cook.
Good.
So
good.
I celebrated twice, went to John's kids for brunch, and then we had a family dinner with everybody. But I do remember having that feeling that you described about, you're the mom, you're the dad, you're the disciplinarian, you're the planner, you're the finance person. It's overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And I think a day like Mother's Day, when you became a mother because of Ross, it's very hard.
It is.
And it's a reminder that you feel like you're in this alone.
Exactly.
And I understand how hard that is.
Yeah.
That loneliness, it's that feeling that you're going to wake up on a day that's supposed to be it's supposed to be about your, you know, you have a child and you raise this child, and it's about, you know, that whole familial unit that, you know, I guess I feel like I was really lacking that day. Like Trish said, it was just lonely.
Yeah.
And I don't need any show. I don't need any pomp and circumstance. I've never been that way. Eric was just a kind man and just wonderful, but he never spoiled me, because I wouldn't let him. He would have, if I would have asked him to, but that wasn't my thing. I don't really do those days. But what I missed was just his presence. I'm a mom because of Eric.
Right.
I mean, let's face it. I wouldn't have kids if I didn't have Eric, right? And so I missed my partner. I missed the kids having a dad. Like, they had no one to go to say, I want to do this for mom.
Right.
And so I think I missed their bond with their dad the most, to even make the day about something. And that was really hard for me.
Knowing Eric as I did, he would have made it fun.
Yeah.
And exactly. No pomp and circumstance.
Yeah.
Right.
But it would have been a fun day.
That's how Ross would have made it.
Right.
It wasn't about gifts. It was celebrating me in the little ways and making it fun. And honestly, just spending together. Like, I would always just want to be us four together. And I miss that so much. Just our four little, you know, unit.
I miss our unit too. I miss us so much. In fact, the other day we had to go somewhere, and I had said, they said, how many are in your party? And I said, five. Fuck. Four. And it just was weird, because I don't want to say four. I want to say five. And Kevin doesn't count.
The dog.
Yes, Kevin is our dog, Trish. We've picked up since Eric passed away.
And I remember I would take the kids shopping, and we would go to the mall back then. And at the mall, you'd see couples walking hand in hand. Maybe they were retired, maybe they weren't. But I remember feeling this sense of sadness that I was no longer in a couple. And yeah. I was envious that they had each other. They had their future. Everything was rolling along. Mm-hmm. And you feel that loss that that isn't how it is. And that's very hard. And days like Mother's Day bring that out.
It does.
It does. Even social media. Mm-hmm. It's the worst on those days, too. I try to avoid social media because it's just a reminder of what was lost.
Me too. I try to avoid social media, avoid restaurants, avoid going out anywhere. So I did plan something for us. Mother's Day is very hard for me, but I planned going to do some rope climbing, but that got rained out. So we ended up going to the batting cages, which was a nice distraction. Mother's Day is tough. Kind of sucks.
It does.
Well, and I really think for the first year and probably 2 years, every holiday sucks.
Yeah.
Because it's a constant reminder of who isn't there. And so the first year to 2 years, it's such a harsh reminder. And happily for you guys, as the years go by, it becomes more the norm and it doesn't hurt as much. Mm-hmm. But it's very hard because it's how you've always experienced these holidays.
Yeah. So Trish, actually leads me to a question I've always wondered because I haven't hit that 1 year mark. And people always talk about, you know, after a year, it's supposed to start getting better. But I've also read a lot from widows and they think the second year is even harder because you kind of, people expect you to be better, so to say. But, and also the acceptance has started to set in. And so that second year is harder in a way. Again, I haven't been through it, but what are your thoughts?
No, I was like you. I thought after a year, this has to get easier. You know, I'm going to be experiencing everything for the first time on my own. But then, as you said, the second year, it sets in that this is my life. Mm-hmm. And that's a very hard realization. So I would say toward the end of coming up on the second anniversary, things got a little better.
Okay.
And you started thinking of your future not as part of this couple, whereas before, that's still how you see yourself. Mm-hmm. You're still Mrs. Ross. Mm-hmm. You're still Mrs. Eric. But as that you go into that third year, you're starting to form a new identity, I think.
I think that's kind of where I feel like I'm exploring this new space right now. You know, last episode that's going to be airing. We talk about moving forward. I talk about moving forward. And I've gotten to this point now where I realize, and I've always known this, but Eric is not coming back. He is not coming back to me. No matter how much I hope and pray and pine, he will not. And I've realized that. I've always known that, but the reality of that is kicking in to me.
Yeah, there's a difference between your what your head says, because you know they're gone, right? Mm-hmm. But your heart, it's like your heart is trying to catch up to your mind.
And I feel like that is kind of where I'm at. I'm starting to explore this. And no matter how many times I look at the garage door, he's not walking through it. And when the garage door opens, I'm not getting butterflies in my stomach anymore because it's not him. Yeah. And every time I would come home from work and I would start making dinner and I'd have the music on in the kitchen and you know I'm dancing and I would hear that garage door open and for 15 years I got butterflies in my stomach when the garage door opened and that stud walked through the door and he was always bitchy when he walked through the door and he'd take one look at me and our eyes would lock and he knew it's time to be part of the family.
Time to let go of all that tension.
Yes. And so I'm wondering if I'm starting to explore acceptance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I remember shortly after Mike died, there was a friend of mine and Janet who had lost not only her husband, but her husband and daughter in a tragic accident. And after Mike died, that had happened 3 years before, and we went out to breakfast one morning, and she said, I know you're going through a hard time. All of us suffer differently. But she said, I'm finally to the point where I'm watching Sleepless in Seattle, and I want to meet my mystery man of the future. I'm now looking to meet someone. And I remembered thinking at the time, how can you even think that way? Mm-hmm. But she did. Mm-hmm. I did. And, you know, she was 3 years out at that point. Mm-hmm. And that's when she had started to think, I need to think about being part of another couple. Mm-hmm. And I do think the happier you were in your marriage, which you both were very happy, I was very happy, you think, I can never be happy like that again. Mm-hmm. And someday you will.
It seems so foreign.
It does. It seems so foreign.
It does. And yeah, it doesn't happen to everyone. But even if you're not part of another couple, you will develop an identity you'll feel comfortable with, and you won't feel that sense of absence. Hmm.
Yeah, that seems so, that loneliness, that absence is so intense. No matter how many people you surround yourself with. I had to stay home and work from home. I don't know, what was it, 2 weeks ago? I was working from home for a week. That was so hard for me to not be surrounded by people, mm-hmm. to not have everyone need me, and, you know, everyone needs me for something at different points in my career, because that's the job that I hold, is I'm a helper, right? I assist people with stuff. I give them guidance. I consult them. And so doing that from home is not the same as people like coming into my office every 5 seconds, like, mm-hmm. I need you. This happened. What do I do? How do I fix this? You know, what's the process? And so that week I was at home and everyone had to call me, and that was okay, but you can just get your mind distracted and get your mind to some really tough spaces. So, I mean, I think I was fine that week, but it was certainly challenging to not be with people, to mm-hmm. feel that loneliness again.
And I think also people I have known now my own age who have lost their spouse, they don't have children at home. They're home alone. They don't have children at home. Now they're best friend and partner is gone. Mm-hmm. I think having children in a sense helps. I know it was busy, but when you have to get up every day and put your pants on and mm-hmm. get those kids to school, and mm-hmm. then you get to work and you're helping people at work, it's a great way to have a sense of purpose for mm-hmm. the day.
Yeah.
It's questionable if I put pants on and take them to school.
Well, that's okay, too.
That's why I love you, Trish.
Just getting them to school is good.
Yes, yeah. I'll always get them to school.
But I agree with you, Trish. I do think that I would be in a much worse place if my kids were not around. And I've said that on here. I've told all my friends that my kids keep me going. They keep me living, because I have to get up. My 3-year-old's hitting me in the head mm-hmm. at, you know, 7 a.m. So it's like it definitely helps. Mm-hmm. 100%. I'm so thankful that I have them.
My gosh, me too. Shortly after Eric passed away, I had sent someone, I think it was Eric's birthday party. So for those of you guys who don't know, my husband and son share the same birthday. And my son was born 4 weeks early on Eric's birthday. So it's like 10:30 at night. I was taking a shower and I wasn't feeling great. And Eric comes into the bathroom and I said, sorry, hon, I'm not going to have the baby on your birthday. And he goes, you don't look good. We need to go in. And I'm like, no, I'm fine. So he gets me in there. And so it's like 10:45. I walk into the hospital and they're like, I don't think you're in labor either. But anyways, they checked me and I was dilated to an 8. And I pushed through one contraction. And at 11:59 p.m., with 30 seconds to go, Ben was born on Eric's birthday.
Oh, that is funny.
Yeah. And so we just celebrated their birthday Sunday, the 15th. But anyways, I was having a party for Eric's birthday and I had ordered a charcuterie board. And this wonderful woman who I've met was preparing this for me. And she's prepared some in the past. And she dropped it off and she said, I wanted to tell you that I lost my husband tragically. And she lost him. He was on business in Colorado, died in a car accident, I think. Sandy, please don't kill me if you're listening. And she was devastated and she had two young kids at home. And the best advice she gave me, which I know I've shared on here, I know I've shared with you too, Allie and Trish, is just like what you said, is you get up every morning and you put 2 feet on the floor. That's the best you can do. Mm-hmm. If you just put those 2 feet on the floor, the day will go on. Mm-hmm. I've never stopped saying that. So I say, you get up in the morning, 2 feet on the floor, inch by inch.
Inch by inch.
That's awesome.
Inch by inch, and you get by. And I'm hopeful that that's this good space that I feel like I'm in over the past like 21 days, 14 days. It's questionable.
So I think if Trish, if you don't mind sharing your story of becoming a widow and also what those first couple months look like afterwards and maybe the year after, what helped you with your grief? If you don't mind sharing that, because I know a lot of people need help with that. I certainly still need help with that. And just any advice you could give.
Well, and I was kind of the opposite of you two in that I had no warning. Mike was a healthy person. Our son, Sean, was supposed to have variant-tailed jaw surgery the next morning where they were going to break his jaw and wire it for 6 weeks. And he was 11 years old, so we were nervous. So Mike said, well, let's go to early morning mass and we'll say a little prayer for Sean to be safe in his surgery. So it was 5 o'clock in the morning. He went downstairs to work out. The last thing he said was, don't be late. It's 6:45 mass. You know, we have to be there on time. And I took my shower. I went downstairs. It was 6:30. And he hadn't come up to get dressed. And I went down to the workout room and found him lying on the ground. And he must have died shortly after he got down there, because when I ran over, he was already cool to the touch. Mm-hmm. And it's such a horrible thought, but I remembered thinking, don't do this to me. Don't do this to me. You can't do this to me. It's just such a foreign thought, but you think, I can't do this. Mm-hmm. And kids were home. It was just awful. And I remembered trying to be strong for them when the ambulance came and going to the hospital and telling them, this is going to be awful, but we'll get through this. We're strong. We can do this. And I think you just go into a fog mm-hmm. where you know you have to get through the funeral, you have to get through the arrangements, you have all these people coming into town or coming over, and I think you just go through that in a blur. But I went back to work after 2 weeks because I couldn't bear to be home alone. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a good move. It's the put one foot in front of the other mm-hmm. strategy. And the first year was dreadful. The second year was hard, but you did learn coping strategies. I read books. I did finally, in the second year, I went to a counselor. And the one thing she said to me, which I thought was very helpful, is she said, the more of a hole you feel inside yourself, the better it will be. Because at some point, that hole that has been inside of you will fill with joy. If you don't allow that hole, everything will just be flat. And you don't want your life to be flat. You want to have the same amount of joy as you did grief. And
wow, that's great advice.
I thought that was very helpful. Lean into the grief is what she said. Mm-hmm. You need to feel that and let that hollow exist. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was very helpful. I tried to do that. Mm-hmm. But I did, for a while, feel like the third wheel if you'd go out with friends who were couples. But that got better, where you would just go out with people. And then I had a few single friends. But developing a social life took a while. And you don't want to do it when you have kids at home in grade school.
Right. That's really right. Hard.
And you have kids at home who are not yet in grade school, Allie.
Right. Right.
Trish, how young were the boys when Mike passed away?
7th and 8th grade.
Okay.
But I was lucky in that my father had moved in with us when he became a widower, just because he was kind of at a loss. So he was there and he said, I'll stay and I'll pick the boys up from school. So it was helpful to have him there, even though sometimes parents can be a load. But yeah, it was helpful. And my boys, sure, to this day, they can imitate his voice perfectly.
Aww.
And they talk like him and they have great feelings of that, even though at times it was kind of like having three kids for me.
Right. Your boys are so sweet. I remember them bringing meals over to us when Eric was sick. And I could tell, like, they wanted to, like, say to my kids, like, they knew.
Right.
And they didn't. And they just, you know, I think that was really sweet that you could tell, like, there was an energy there.
Well, the one thing that my kids would tell you today, and I think this is helpful as you're raising kids, is even though that was a tragic, awful thing that happened, it gave us the strength that we have today. We became stronger, mm-hmm, because of it. And even though it was awful, there was a positive side in that we realized when the worst thing happens, we can get through that and we can rise.
Gosh, that's great, Trish. Thanks for that.
That is great.
That makes me feel a lot better. I've been struggling with our family, and I just don't want them to, I don't want them to miss out on life, right? And I know that I won't let them miss out on life. You know, I can do it all. I know that I can do it all. I don't necessarily want to, but I know that I can. And so I'm hopeful that I remain strong for them, that they see that.
And I will tell you, my boys, and I think your kids will do the same, when they had friends who lost a parent, they immediately went over there. They said, you know, I'm here for you. I know this hurts. I love you. So it made them much more empathetic people and able to go right in there and not stay back and feel awkward. So your kids and your kids will know how to help others when they go through this.
Oh, that's so comforting. Because I have two little boys, as you know, and I worry so much about them. I want to know how you got through the teenage years with two boys. Because it's like, I don't know how I'm going to do it. And I've actually talked to Connor about this. I said, I just am worried about my boys. I want them to be okay. And he told me, he's like, I'm okay. I went through this and I'm okay. And I have a great life. That's just so comforting to me, because that you do. You worry about your children. You want them to be okay and to be happy in this life. And I like that they will be more empathetic. I think that's
sweet.
That is so sweet.
Allie, your boys are wonderful humans. Now, Hanky is little, right? But you're doing really, really good. You don't give yourself the credit that you deserve. The power that you exude every single day, despite the way you feel, those boys are damn good kids.
Oh,
they're kind,
Crystal.
And they're loving. And your house is clean. And
no,
your bills
not.
Are paid. And your yard is cut. And you go to work every day. And you're freaking hot.
Oh, my gosh. So, Crystal,
and I will tell you, Connor recently started dating someone.
Yeah.
And he said, I really am drawn to this woman, and I think it's because she kind of reminds me of you in that she's a badass.
Oh, that's awesome.
She pulled herself up from the bootstraps and took charge of her life, and he said, I love that about women. I like strong women. Mm-hmm. And I think both of your children will find that to be true.
And your boys have always been close to you?
Yes. Well, first of all, they tell me more than I ever want to know.
Imagine. How old are your boys now? I can't remember.
35 and 37.
Okay.
And I still talk to them almost every day.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And one lives in D.C. and Connor lives here, as you know. But, yep. And they're very close to each other.
Yeah. Oh, see, that's, I've told all my friends this. My boys are also very close, and I don't want that to ever go away.
Mm-hmm. And Allie knew my boys when they were growing up, but they were so different as children. Mm-hmm. Sean was, you know, into movies and shows and all that, and Connor was into sports. But as they aged, they became more alike. Mm-hmm. And now they're just the best of buds.
Oh, I love that. Awesome.
I love that too. I know that my girls, they will be close. They're close now. I think they'll always be close. Like, I can't imagine a world where they aren't best friends. And they're 11 and 13, so I know that there's very changing times emerging in our household. How I'm going to handle that alone, I have no idea, and I'm scared shitless. I mean, literally scared to death with girls. And girls who lost their dad at vulnerable ages, that I will get that used against me in teenage years of some sort. I'm so worried about it, likely unnecessarily. But I'm a little worried about Ben because he doesn't have a counterpart.
He has Gussie.
He does have Gussie. Mm-hmm.
Gus and Ben have, their bond is really cool to watch. Mm. They immediately met each other and just instantly knew, you know what I feel. Mm-hmm. They didn't say that, mm-hmm. but you can tell.
I really want to quit grief counseling, personally.
I thought you said you liked the last session.
Okay, well, here's why. Here's something that I have to just throw out there. And Trish, maybe tell me if this is a way that you felt. So in this group, like, there's people who've lost people in many different ways, right? And so you'll have conversations about who you lost, how you lost them, and it could be children, it could be spouses, it could be parents, it could be anyone, mm-hmm. anybody at all. And there's this wonderful, wonderful couple, and they've lost a child. And as we talk, the husband is like soothing the wife in the conversation, putting arm around and just making her feel comfortable. And that for me is like
hard.
It's hard.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a jealous person. Like I said on another episode, like, I had the best. I don't have a ton of jealousy towards other couples. That doesn't necessarily bother me. I just move on with my life. I'm happy that other people are happy. I want that for everyone. But I did miss, like, when I'm having a bad day, I wouldn't mind
some comfort from someone who loves you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I remember when Connor and Sean were at Creighton Prep, which was a couple of years later, I joined the single parents group at Prep. And there were only two of us in there who had lost someone to death. And the rest were divorced parents. Oh. And that is one angry group, let me tell you.
Oh, my gosh.
This woman brought a book into one of the meetings called Co-Parenting with a Jerk.
Oh, no.
And she said everybody should read it. And I thought, I just want to co-parent.
Right. You know? Oh, amen.
But I remember trying to keep my sense of humor. And this priest said, well, Is there anything positive about being a single parent? We all know the negatives. Is there anything positive? And I said, you get the remote all to yourself. And people just stared daggers at me. I mean, it was so, I didn't care much for the group scene
right.
myself. Yeah. But it was interesting that here I was going through all this grief because I didn't have someone, and they were going through their grief because they hated the person who was on
right.
the other side of the equation. And
right.
that was not helpful to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is all grief. I do have to right. say, yeah. you know, Allie and I've talked about that before. It's about your life not being the way you expected it to be.
Right.
And I have a few friends who've tried to relate their divorce to my situation. And I can empathize with their loss of their expectations, but loss of a spouse and still having a co-parent, those
right.
are two
oh,
very
so
different situations. So if I didn't have children, I could probably relate better mm-hmm. to a divorcee.
Yeah.
One of the women in this group said to me, nobody brought me any casseroles when my husband left.
Oh
Oh gosh,
Trish.
Whoa. Oh boy.
Jeez. So
there was some anger in that single parent group.
Oh boy.
Yeah, sounds like it. Wow.
Yeah. Now, Trish, how long has it been since Mike passed away?
22 years.
22 years. Wow. And when did you and John get married?
We got married 16 years ago.
Okay. So tell us what that was like.
Well, it was really fortunate in that Mike and John had been in the same law office together. Mm. And so I knew John when he was married. He knew Mike and I when we were married. And John had been divorced for about 10 or 12 years when we met. Mm-hmm. So, as he said, you were lucky in that you met me when I finally grew up.
Oh.
But the nice thing is he could tell my boys stories about their dad and funny things he did on the golf course. And
That's awesome.
So it really helped in that there was some knowledge there and familiarity. Mm-hmm. And so John never felt any conflict there about Mike and I and the boys. He just felt like it all belonged. And when he asked me to marry him, he talked to my boys and all of Mike's children by his first marriage and said, I just want to fit in. This is a wonderful family. And, you know, I think this would honor your father.
Trish, what a beautiful story.
Yes. Yep.
Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that helps to give some hope to our listeners that there's, you know.
When you were dating, when you started that process, was it hard because it reminded you of when you were first dating Mike and like, did it bring up grief, I guess?
No, it brought up terror.
Terror.
Terror. And I remember, you know, I would have to have a drink or two going out just to get kind of the liquid courage to go on the date. And the boys would be like, you drink? Like, well, I am tonight. But it was terrifying because it'd been, you know, 20 some years since I'd been out on a date. And mm-hmm. when you're in your 40s, it's a little different than when you're 19.
Yeah. Oh,
so,
yeah.
I won't say it brought up grief, but it was uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When did you start feeling comfortable? Still don't. No.
Tell, Trish.
I would say it took 6 months. And the only person really I dated was John. Mm-hmm. But he was very respectful because he didn't want to put anything on me. So I don't think we even kissed each other for 4 months mm-hmm. because he was waiting like you do it when you're comfortable.
Oh, wow.
So
that's great.
What a sweetheart.
What a kind man.
Yeah.
He is a kind man.
Yeah. That's awesome. I love hearing that story.
Mm-hmm. I do too. So did Connor and Sean accept him right away?
Yes, because we waited months to even introduce him. We thought unless we're kind of a strong couple where we feel like it's going to be mm-hmm. a somewhat serious relationship. Why get them involved?
Right.
So they thought it was funny. And the first night I ever went out with John, they said, this is a date, isn't it? I said, no, it's just dinner with an old friend. And they're like, oh, no, it's a date. You know? It was pretty cute.
That is so fun.
So cute.
That is a really cool
But I will
story.
Tell you one last touching story. When I was thinking about dating, and I hadn't really gone out with John at that point, but I was starting to look at, should I do this? I had this dream, and it was the most amazing dream I've ever had. And I dreamt, I walked up into our bedroom and the door was closed. And I opened the door and there was Mike sitting on our bed with reading glasses on, reading the newspaper like he would have been. And he came up and he gave me a hug and he said, I know I should be here for you, but I'm not. So you need to move on with your life because I'm not here. And he gave me a hug and then the dream was over. And I still feel like that was a message from him you need to start moving on with your life. This is okay. Don't feel bad about what you're thinking.
Oh, wow.
I have chills, Trish.
I know.
It's amazing.
It is. But I think you have to be, and I know you have the signs that you get, but you do have to be open to what messages you're getting.
Wow.
Do you still get signs?
No.
You don't?
Nope. And every dream I've ever had since then, Mike never speaks.
Really?
I mean, he may be off in the dream and talking to somebody else, but never speaks
to you?
To me.
How many dreams have you had about Mike since he passed away, would you say?
Well, early on, I would have some frequent, although that one was just stunningly direct. But the ones I've had, and maybe I have one once a year now, but it's where there's some big gathering and he's at the gathering, but he's not talking. And I'm thinking, what's with you? You know, and there's some frustration, but there's never any discussion.
Wow.
So I think that's in whatever message or your head or your subconscious saying, he's not there, you know?
Yeah.
You're looking for him to be there and speak to you and be like it was, but that isn't how it is.
I wish Eric would come to me again in a dream.
And have you had a dream?
I've had two so far. But yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing him again.
And you will.
It's just that Allie hadn't cried in a while. And here I am now thinking about him.
Yeah.
I just wish I could see him again. Yeah. Wish I could have something like that where he could kind of direct me on where to go right now.
And you may.
Yeah.
Yep.
I do love him so much.
Of course you do.
I know.
That'll never change.
I know.
Yeah, that will never change.
I know.
I do want to share. So we haven't really talked a lot about it, but I grew up across the street. This is how I know Trish. So I grew up across the street from her and Mike and Connor and Sean. And I was a year older, but I think actually really close to Connor's age. And we would hang out. We were like best friends. Like I remember going over to your house and we would have like Hulk Hogan's and like, I don't know. It was just so fun. But a memory that sticks out so clear from when Mike passed is at the funeral. Actually, I think it was the wake where Sean gave his speech. Like that speech still gives me chills. How old was he again? 11?
Yeah, he was in seventh grade.
He was in seventh grade and he got up and the first one to speak too. I'll never forget. He was the first one to speak. He got up and he gave this like remarkable speech.
Wow.
And I remember at the very end, he said, "All I want for Christmas is my dad back." Oh, wow. Because wasn't this in like November?
It actually was the day after my birthday. It had been my birthday and it was December. It was a warm December day and Mike and I played 9 holes of golf. He kind of called and said, "Let's take off work and play some golf." Mm-hmm. We did. We went out to dinner, had a wonderful night. And then it was the next morning. It was mid-December.
Okay, mid-December. I knew it was around Christmas because like I said, the speech still gives me chills to this day. It was, I remember leaving like, wow, that kid is going places, you know? And it just was amazing.
That is cool.
Mm-hmm.
Amelia read Eric's obituary at Eric's funeral. My kids didn't really want to say much. I just said, whatever you want to say, it's up to you. And you're welcome to say whatever you want to say. And Amelia said, "Mom, can I read the obituary?"
That was so amazing, but yeah. Go ahead.
She said the only part she wasn't going to read is the part about dead sexy. But it took a lot of courage for her to get up.
Wow, yes.
To do that. Yeah. We did a dance party at Eric's funeral. Did I tell you that?
I missed the dance party.
You did?
Yes.
Did you have to leave early?
Yes.
Oh, no.
So you danced.
We did dance. Our family always dances. I'm a really bad dancer, but we always dance.
Yeah, I'm like Elaine in Seinfeld.
Me too, Trish. But there's always a time and place for dancing, always, I think.
And one other thing I'll share, mm-hmm. because you talked about finally realizing Eric's not coming back. And I read the book. I don't know if you two read the book, The Year of Magical Thinking.
No.
Mm-mm. Well, you should. Joan Didion, who she's now passed away herself.
I love Joan Didion.
Right.
That girl is sweet.
So this book is, it talks about her year after she lost her husband. Mm-hmm. And they had been visiting their daughter who was in the ICU with some infection and she was in a coma and they came home to have dinner and she was getting the dinner ready and he basically just dropped dead at dinner. Yeah. But she said the magical thinking of that year is I cannot get rid of his clothes or his shoes because he'll be mad when he comes back. And she said that kept resonating with me and finally, after some period of time, it hit me, he's not coming back. And she said she couldn't give his things away because in her mind, he would be returning. And I think that is what goes on in your head.
When did you get rid of Mike's stuff?
It was within a few months. And I let all the kids take whatever they wanted.
Sure.
Everybody took a piece of clothing mm-hmm. because it still smells like them.
Yeah.
And you want to sniff
yeah.
And keep that. But, and then I got a storage unit, which that's another story, and it was a financial mistake, but put a whole bunch of stuff in there mm-hmm. to see if anyone wanted it later. And then we would just kind of go through it annually.
Yeah.
And finally decided.
Yeah.
What meant something and what didn't. But that's hard.
Oh, I haven't even touched any of Ross's either. Things. I can't do it. I still have his car.
Yeah. I touch it to like hug it.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know when I'll be ready for that.
You should keep the second car. Like, why would you get rid of it?
I don't know. It just seems silly. I don't know. In my head, I'm like, in my head, not my heart again. Mm-hmm. My head is like, why do you need two cars? I don't. But my heart is like,
it's
Ross
his.
Loved that
it's
car.
His.
Yeah, right. That's absolutely. His car. Like every time I get into it, every time I drive into our garage, I get excited to see his car because mm-hmm. I'm like, he's here.
Yeah. When you pick me up in his car, I feel him.
Yeah. That's Ross's car. Uh-huh.
That's why I was like, why would you even think about that?
It's I know. Him. It's I'm like, not. I'm not. I'm, right. That was an example. I'm right. not.
And I don't like when I walk into your house, I don't feel him as much. Like, I don't feel him as much as, like, when I get into his car. Maybe because it's smaller and I just kind of feel, mm-hmm. I knew how much his car meant to him just mm-hmm. from what you've told me.
Yeah.
So I just feel him in your car.
Yeah. Remember when you spilled slushy in my car and he's going to strike you down?
Yeah. I had a shitty week.
Oh, no. Rossy, be nice. Right.
No. Yeah. I spilled the slushy because you put it in the cup holder and it was not meant to go in a cup holder.
It's my fault.
It was meant to be like one of those things like between your feet or like between your legs, like holding it.
But I parked so that you could get out to the bathroom.
That's true. I did spill the slushie. But I do remember that. I mean, yeah. I do feel Ross in that car for some reason.
Yeah, I feel him too. I also feel him in our backyard. I feel him very much in our closet. Isn't that weird? I feel him.
I understand.
Yeah. Do your sons have signs? Do they still?
Do they
talk to him?
They have had occasional dreams.
Oh.
They do. They'll go to the cemetery uh-huh. and talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I think they do still have, they have better memories than I do in terms of Connor and Sean both. They can pinpoint exactly what happened and when they played golf, they did this on that hole. Or
oh, cool. That's so cool.
Yep. Yeah, they still... they treasure that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I know that my Hank, who's three, is really going to struggle as he gets older because he's not going to remember memories like that. It's all going to be based off of pictures and what Gus remembers and what I talk about. And I worry about mm-hmm. my boys, but.
I worry about mine, too, because one thing that I've been working through the past couple of weeks, like we were celebrating Eric's birthday on Sunday, And we were reminiscing about Eric, and I realized the only thing that I could remember about Eric was our cancer journey, because it was 2 years of trauma. I mean, It was just trauma after trauma after trauma. I was telling a friend about, I was talking about something, but I was like, yeah, I had to take Eric in every day for an infusion. And I drove him in, you know, and it was just, I mean, he was sick. He was very sick. He was hospitalized frequently. So like my journey was so different in the way that like I didn't get, from the moment he got sick, I didn't have many good times. And so Ben, you know, he's 7 now. He was 4 when Eric passed away. He turned 5 that year. He is probably not going to remember Eric healthy.
Right.
He's only going to remember Eric sick. And that's kind of sucky for me, but.
And I will say, and you two can weigh in here, I had the opposite experience of you. Both of your husbands had a long illness before they passed away. I've always felt I was lucky in that Mike died after we'd had a wonderful day and there was no warning. But I know you don't get that time to come to grips with it, and it's so sudden. But I think what you went through, both of you, with the years preceding the death would be traumatic for everybody.
It was. Yeah. It was traumatic for my whole family, too. Right. Like my parents, his parents. I mean, cancer is just the worst. It affects so many people. Gosh. Not just one person that's diagnosed. It affects everything. And it is, trauma is a great word because that's what it is. It's very traumatic.
Yeah, for Eric's family, it was really, really traumatic, and I feel awful. I can't take it back. I can't change it. But our journey was through COVID, and because he was so sick, he had no immune system. Like everything they gave him wiped out his entire immune system.
Right.
Deadly. So even a cold could have killed Eric. So for us, like we didn't know what COVID was in 2020, so nobody got to see him. We were locked in our house. We went to therapy appointment to his infusion therapies, and we came home. For me and the kids, it was great because I don't have, in fact, at grief therapy last week, they talked about like, what regrets do you have? I honestly don't have any. I do wish that we would have made a few more videos. That would have been nice. And some pictures. But I don't feel bad over that. But that is one major regret that I can think of that I have. The kids and I got to see him all the time, but nobody else could. And I think that was really hard for Eric's parents and really hard for his family to not be able to see him very often. We would go out in the garage and we would sit outside as much as we could and just really try to be a part of it. But we didn't know. And I feel really bad that they didn't get to spend as much time with him as I think that would have been meaningful to them.
Although, as you said, it was so difficult with him being ill. Mm-hmm. That's hard, too.
What did someone say to you that you're like, oh, my God, why would you say that to a widow?
Well, there was someone who in the receiving line, or not the receiving line, but you know what I mean, mm-hmm. where people are coming up to see the family at the wake.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, there was a guy who came up to me, slapped me on the back and said, you're young. You'll be fine. You'll find somebody else.
Oh,
that's exactly what happened to me, too.
Right.
It's just why? Like,
right.
My heart's been ripped out. Right. That's like the last thing you should say.
Why does everyone think that we're looking for someone else?
Right.
I did have a perfect marriage. Like I don't have any regrets in my marriage.
Yeah.
I'm really happy. I am lucky. And that's what I tell people. I had the best of the best.
Mm-hmm. And
that's where I'm happy at.
I did have people say to me when Mike died, I wish it'd been my husband and not him. You guys were so happy and I can't stand mine. I mean, who says that? Who's married?
Right. Yeah, it's horrible.
It is horrible. That is awful.
But it does make you realize how fortunate you were.
It does. And I didn't know mm-hmm. that, Trish, until after Ross passed. I really did not know that until talking to several people who have made it very clear to me that I think the marriage we had was rare. I don't know.
Hmm.
So that's my thoughts on it.
I haven't had a lot of that. I haven't had people who've said my marriage is awful.
They don't say that, but it's just...
But you can see it.
You can sense it.
Yeah.
And I didn't sense it before because I was not paying attention, I guess, to that.
And the people who would... Some of the people who would say, let's go out, let's do things, they were people who wanted to get away from home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that I think is what you see, is people who don't enjoy spending time
together.
Exactly.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did anybody give you really good advice?
Well, I think the best one was let that hole deepen with your sadness, because someday that will refill with joy. Mm-hmm. And it does. You become happier, more comfortable, happy with your life, with your children.
Yeah.
So I think that was the best piece of advice, was don't try to block it out. Mm-hmm. Lean into it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Janet told me when we had our breakfast, she said, a great place to let it all out is in the shower. You want to be strong for your kids. But she said, you can go in that shower and howl. And nobody's any the wiser.
The first year, I felt like I really let it all out. I feel like I didn't push it down. I wasn't pretending something wasn't happening. I wasn't avoiding the fact that I was grieving Eric so much. And that hole was so, so, so deep. And it really wasn't until, I don't know, Allie, maybe it was after we went to the place, our nature place.
Okay.
That we can't say the name of.
Yeah.
But.
Our retreat
where we go, that I really kind of started to find joy. And that's a lot of the narrative that I'm working through now, which is I am happy that I have 3 healthy kids. I'm happy that I'm healthy. Mm-hmm. I'm happy that I have a job. I'm happy that I have a house. I'm happy that I have my life.
And happy you two have each other.
I am so happy to have you.
Yes. We're so, yes.
Yep. That's a gift.
Yeah.
And probably divine intervention.
Oh, absolutely. We were brought together.
Yeah. I mean, I know we say this every single episode.
Because it's the truth.
It is the truth. I could not.
It's
do
a
this
sign in
you.
And itself. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But thank you, Trish, for bringing us together.
No kidding.
I mean, you are the matchmaker right here.
You are the matchmaker, Trish.
Well, exactly. But you two are kindred spirits. In
Did
more
you know
than
that?
One way.
Did you know that when you? Because I remember you asking me about, you know, Allie and telling me about her. Did you know that we were kindred spirits?
Yep.
Wow. And you didn't know me that well. And you knew Allie really well.
But I knew it in my heart.
That is so cool. We are kindred spirits.
And I didn't know you that well. But after that obituary, I knew this was going to be, it was going to be perfect. And mm-hmm. and then.
Yeah. And then Ross's. Ross. Yeah. I think I even might have said somewhere, I'm like, I need to find Crystal. And you
I
knew her.
Right. You did say, I need to know this woman.
I just knew
amazing.
I needed to.
And I sent you a text and said, mm-hmm. I know her.
Yes. That's what happened.
That's awesome.
Yep.
It is divine intervention. Well, Allie, do you have anything else for tonight that you want to talk about?
I don't think so. Thank you, Trish, so much. Well,
this has been great.
Yeah, I'm so grateful. I know we had talked before about going out and having a cocktail. We definitely need to do that for sure.
Yes.
And you're now a member of the Hot Widows Club.
Thank you.
So
thank you.
The two members
the
has
OG.
Now become
the
three.
OG.
The OG.
And so now, now to our listeners, where there used to be 2 members of this club, there are now 3. Mm. Several more in queue, which I think will expand the club in and of itself. But, you know, because we have Lindsay.
Yes.
Our dear friend.
It's a very special club.
Very special club. And then Connie, my very dear friend, who I am very anxious to interview as well.
And it's a club no one wants to be a member of, but so happy you have others in the club to be with.
That is awesome.
Exactly.
So our episode hasn't aired yet. We record way in advance of our episodes airing. And we're about to air one that talks about widowhood being like the worst hood to be in, but also a very, when you find that hood, so much connection that's instantaneous.
Right.
Yes. And welcoming hearts.
Right. Yep. It's like, you're a widow. We're friends.
Yep. That's exactly right.
And we are deep, deep, deep friends. Like it goes, like the minute I meet you, we are the best of friends now.
Right.
Because you get me. And so you don't really have anyone who meets me.
Unless you're in grief group.
Then yeah, if you're in grief group. No, I really like the people in grief group. And they're really growing on me. They're really kind people. It's just that.
I'm actually starting to get a lot out of it.
Yeah.
It's made me realize that everybody grieves differently. Mm-hmm. And I think that's okay. It's okay for. And it also is just part of the journey.
Right.
You know, the people in my grief group. So we go to something, Trish, where our kids can meet other kids that have lost either a parent or a child or a sibling. And then they split the parents up or the guardians up in separate rooms. And so I'm in a different room than Crystal. But my group, it's interesting. There's a lot of suicides. And so it's hard, for me to relate to that. I went through a very traumatic cancer journey versus someone who chose to take their own life, but we're helping each other because grief really is just love. Mm-hmm. We love our people and we're connected.
Mm-hmm. I do love the people in grief group. Don't get me wrong. Like they are really kind, wonderful people and they are helping me. They're helping one another. It is a really nice grief group. It was really hard to see the husband consoling the wife because you can tell they have a good marriage too. And it just reminds me of Eric and it was just sadness of missing Eric. But what it does is I'm an empathetic person. And so I hear their grief stories and I want to fix them. I want to help them and I want to help each and every single one of them. And that's kind of exhausting to me. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of that suffocating feeling that I talk about. I feel like it's my responsibility to help them and it's not. And I know that. Mm-hmm. And so that's.
But I think we try to be fixers of everything once you've lost someone.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't fix grief. It's
true,
there.
Trish, you can't.
So true.
And it comes in waves.
Yes.
And when you least expect it.
Yep.
And when you most expect it.
Yeah.
Like Mother's Day.
Like Mother's Day.
Mother's Day can fuck off.
Jeez.
I'm done with Mother's Day, and I'm not looking forward to Father's Day. May is just tough for me. It's bad. You know,
I mean,
my Mother's Day experience is so different than, it's probably not that different, but to me, it's multifaceted, so. All right, well, we're going to go ahead and sign off for tonight. We appreciate Trish joining us. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Trish.
It's been lovely. Yeah.
Thank you, Trish.
Thanks for having me.
For anyone else who has a story they'd like to share with us, we would love to hear any of your stories about widowhood, grief, or any of the topics that we discussed tonight.
And Father's Day is coming up. So if any of you have lost your father and would like to share your story, please email us.
Yes, at hotwidowsclubpodcast@gmail.com.
Thank you.
Thank you.